this is Leary Guns. How is everybody doing?
Great.
Excellent. Welcome to the bi-weekly Q&A calls, live action. We'll be on here as long as you need. We got some new people on, I'm sure. And we have a different group every night. And we might have anywhere from 5 to 50 people on here. So you never know. But everybody just be respectful. I'll leave the lines unmuted. So, you know, anybody can chime in when you need to. But this is really kind of laid back. You're just throwing out questions, and I'll elaborate, give an answer. And anybody else, feel free to chime in. So with that said, let's just go ahead and jump right in and get started. Who has a question tonight?
You.
Anybody have a question you want to throw out? I know we got a lot of people on the line. Who's got a deal you're working on? Something you've been thinking about doing? A question? A concern? Anything? This is your opportunity to stump Larry. Can you guys hear me? Hello?
Yes.
Yes, we can hear you.
Good.
Yes.
But nobody has a question? That's never happened.
Hey, Larry, this is Corey in Utah. I have one that I guess I can pose.
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
Good. So I'm kind of a shy guy. I haven't done a deal yet, and I really need to. The biggest problem for me is approaching people about money and trying to generate funds. And what advice do you have for me when I'm like I had a scenario tonight where I approached my most likely source of funds. He's a friend that I've known for years, and I talked to him about finding deals through HUD.
Right.
And of course he wanted to know everything about it, and so, of course, I mentioned HUD Homes Half Off, and he went directly to your website while we were on the phone, and then I think he even went to Audible and bought the book. And
cool.
So it is cool, but what? But the thing is, now I know I need to be able to get money for, like, the worst-case scenario from what I've read is to have a partner because he's going to be very, very expensive. But what can I do as somebody who hasn't done a deal yet to get money for from private money sources for, you know, the going rate, like 10 or 12%?
So, well,
instead of having them want to be my 50% partner.
Right. Well, first of all, let me say, having a partner is you're going to pay more for a partner than anything else, but
yeah.
Having a partner to do your first few deals is not the end of the world, and it's not a big deal because I would rather have half of something than all of nothing if that's the only source you have right now. And then once you get a few deals under your belt, then you'll have some, a track record and a history, and you can say, look, here's what I've done. I've done this, you know, and here's how much I pay for private money, and it's short term. So, and I just said short term, but that was my next thing is what exactly are you looking to do? What model are you doing? What are you buying and selling? Are you wholesaling? Are you fix and flip? Are you seller financing or lease options? So if I know that, it'll give me a better idea as to what to tell you to go get money.
Well, my strategies that I've talked about with my coach are our number one seller financing, and then but along the way doing wholesale deals. But you know, with like he was telling me, and you've talked about several times, deals where you you buy them and you realize they're going to be a better deal to just put them right back on the market and sell them. So
right.
Of course, but there's, you know, it's easy to get sidetracked by different strategies, but those are what I'm going for.
You know what? It is easy to get sidetracked by different strategies, and I love seller financing. You can make a lot more money on the seller financing. However, starting out, if you're brand new and you have limited funds, even though you can make more money with the seller financing, buy it, sell it, sell the note, it's a shorter transaction to get to a payday by wholesaling.
Yeah.
So, and if you're wholesaling, you get it under contract, you start marketing it right away, and then right after you start marketing it, you find a buyer, and you get your buyer lined up to buy it from you at the same time that you're buying it yourself. So if you could do that, you can use transactional funding or even short-term money, primarily transactional funding. And that's pretty easy to get, transactional funding. About any transactional funding lender out there will loan you money. Some of them it's just for a day, but there's a lot of them out there that will loan it for a few days for you to close and then turn around and resell. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. And I've, that's the thing is I haven't found any transactional lenders in my area, but I just need to put in more time. The sources that are in your tabs. The tab browser.
Any source that I give you is going to be nationwide. So all those sources.
Uh-huh.
It's not necessarily in your area. Maybe they don't have an office in your area, but pretty much any transaction lender I know of, they loan nationwide. They're not area specific.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to spend more time just nailing down a few that would work. And
sure. Sure, and that should be pretty simple to do. Should be pretty simple to do. I mean, have you Googled transactional funding?
No, I haven't. I've just looked at your sources so far.
Okay. How many of them have you called?
No, I haven't called any of them.
Okay. Well, see, there's your sign. And I'm not trying to give you a hard time. I'm just saying that, it's one thing to look at a website and say, oh, they're not in my area. It's another thing to pick up the phone and call them and say, here's what I'm doing. Will you lend in my area?
Yeah.
Good, good. So, man, I hope that helped. Does that help you?
Yeah, it does. I think that is definitely where I need to focus. And, you know, maybe it's not such a bad deal to have this guy as a partner and, you know, just to get the first few deals off the ground. So.
Well, and if he went and got the book, he's definitely interested. However, he's going to find out that, you know, being a private money lender and actually going out and analyzing deals and making offers and working and negotiating deals and buying the property himself, that's two whole different things. That's the difference between being an active investor and a passive investor. And, you know, if he's a person you were interested in working with as a private lender, chances are he's probably already got a business or a job or a career going on, and you wanted to just use his money. So he's probably not going to take the time to go do deals, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think he would want to be involved. He does. He's an appraiser and an agent, and has done several million dollars worth of deals so far this year.
Oh, good,
and,
good. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey,
so that's his
quite scenario. Frankly, if he's an appraiser, if you're just starting out, it would be worth it to give him half the profit. If he's an appraiser and can help you, you know, determine for sure, hey, is this a really good deal, it'd be worth giving him half the money on your first half a dozen deals.
Well, true. I'm an appraiser too, though. So
oh, okay.
I can do that work myself. But
okay, good. I didn't realize that.
But really, he, I don't know, I think the benefit would be, hey, it doesn't matter. As long as I can get a deal off the ground, after years of studying and not being, you know, not getting myself to be able to do it, hey, that's probably better than not doing it.
Right. Exactly. Well, good. I hope that helps.
Okay. Thanks, Blair.
You're very welcome. Anytime. My pleasure. Anybody else have a question?
If you do a transactional funding, aren't they going to want to know where the third source is to pay for that property? You know, like, say, a hard money lender or something like that. You know, in other words, they provide the money, you know, so you can...
Wait a minute, are you talking to me? I can barely hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry.
A transactional funder.
Okay, can you start over now? I can hear you now.
Okay. If you have a transactional funder and he's going to put up the money for you to close the deal, he's going to want to know where is the money going to come from to pay him. And so you have to have the deal lined up, you know, to your buyer, or if you can get it financed, or are you going to have a hard money lender to cover the transactional funding costs? Is that how it goes or no?
Well, the transactional funding is used for wholesaling when you have to physically buy it and pay for it, and then you can sell it and get paid. So
okay.
A transactional funding lender, anybody who's doing transactional funding lending, they know, you know, how to set it up in the sense that here's the way it works. Not many people really know this, but here's the way it works. Whenever you close a transaction, any lender sends what's called closing instructions to the closing attorney and or title company, okay? And the closing instructions are exactly what the attorney or title company must follow to do the closing. In a transactional funding scenario, the closing instructions plainly state, do not release my money from your escrow account to purchase the property until the end buyer has signed all their documents and wired their money. So the transactional funding lender is never at risk.
Yes, sir. That's what
sense?
I was wondering. Yes.
Yeah. So the transactional funding lender, they're never at risk. The money is there. All the documents have been signed, and really, the attorney or title company, depending on what state it's in, attorney or title company could use the end buyer's money to pay the seller, but a lot of them will not nowadays. Okay, but that's how it works. The closing instructions specifically state: make sure the property is sold to the end buyer, and all the documents have been signed, and the end buyer's money has hit the account before you release my money to the seller for the transaction funding. Okay.
So it would be
they're always covered.
Okay. So it wouldn't be a good idea to actually get the property under contract under that scenario until I had the end buyer, until I knew who the end buyer was, and then that would make it where I could follow with the instructions.
Well, no, you're not going to have to wait until you get an end buyer before you get the property under contract. You know,
okay.
That's why it's important to build your buyer's list, and also to start marketing the property right away. Because when you're wholesaling, you're going to get your property under contract, you're going to send it out to your buyer's list, you're going to put out about 20 or 25 bandit signs that say foreclosure, and you're going to put it out on Craigslist, you're going to start fielding calls, and you're going to work it as hard as you can. But you don't necessarily have to find a buyer before you get the property under contract. Otherwise, it would be easy for them to go around you. Does that make sense? Hello?
Yes, sir.
Good. Excellent, excellent. Cool. Who else has a question?
So, Larry, this is Corey again.
Hey.
Hey, so on the transactional funding, did you say, I don't remember from HUD Homes Half Off, did you say that you cannot use transactional funding for a HUD deal?
No, what I said is you cannot assign a HUD contract, but yes, you can use transactional funding.
Okay, it just needs to be, so you can't, so it wouldn't be a deal where you assign the contract, you just do what you talked about in terms of doing the transactional funding, but then does, I guess HUD doesn't know or care that there is an end buyer?
No, all HUD cares about is that they get paid.
Okay.
They don't care where the money comes from, they just care that they get paid. And what I mean by that is they don't care if you're using a loan or a credit card or a partner or transaction funding or whatever, as long as you can close and the money's there to close with.
Okay.
Yeah, good. Good, good. I hope that helped.
Larry, on HUD properties, do you usually use HUD's closing attorney or do you select your own?
Well, see, not so long ago, they changed that where HUD does not have their own attorneys anymore. So you can use whoever
okay.
you want to. There is no such thing as a HUD attorney any longer since they changed asset managers, even before they did that a while back. They eliminated having their own attorneys or title companies, so you can use whoever you want to.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a good advantage because they weren't paying enough for the attorneys to hire good staff, and you just about had to hire your own attorney to help process the deal anyway because they didn't have very good people that could spend much time helping you close the deal, if that makes
okay.
sense. Yeah, good. Awesome, awesome. Who else has a question?
I was just wondering about the transactional funding. Can I get a hard money loan, hard money loan to cover the transaction funding, and then I would take control of the property that way?
Well, let me ask you a question. If you have a hard money loan lined up to pay off the transactional funding the next day, why do you need the transactional funding?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out. What would be the, you know, advantage of it?
There
of
is
that.
None.
Okay. Okay.
There is none. And hard money loans are typically used for like fix and flip loans or rehab
uh-huh.
loans, they call them. You don't want to use a rehab loan for a short term, like a 1 day or 2 day or 3 day, because they want to make their money on the, you know, interest and points. You know, they're going to get, you know, you're going to make monthly payments and all that typically, and it's for a fix and flip. But so don't use a hard money lender for a, you know, 1 or 2 or 5 day loan. But if you have a hard money loan lined up, there's no need for transactional funding. They would just fund the deal at the closing when you buy it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm just trying to see the advantage of the transactional funding, you know, maybe to be able to stay within your closing date or something like that, you know. But then that's not a problem either because you can just get an extension, right?
Right.
You know,
the whole purpose of transactional funding is wholesaling. If you're wholesaling
okay.
a property and you're buying it at 10 o'clock for $40,000, and you're selling it at 10:30 for $50,000, but you
mm-hmm.
don't have the $40,000, so you can collect the $50,000 30 minutes later, you use
no,
transactional funding because your buyer, the $50,000, they're going to wire the money. They're going to sign all the documents anyway, so the money's going to be there. It's just your attorney or title company is going to require you to fund the deal before they allow you to sell it to the end buyer. So transactional funding will take care of the money paying your seller for the 30 minutes you own it until you can collect from your end buyer 30 minutes later.
Great. Now I understand. Thanks.
Good, good, good. Good. I'm glad I explained it. again like that. That's good. So anybody else have a question?
Yeah, I did have a question about the private money now, you know, instead of the...
Sure.
Basically, now, this is just some of the things I've been listening to, you know, as far as the hard money lender and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, the private money would go out a little bit further in case you might own the property, and then you might say, well, you know what? I changed my mind. I don't want to wholesale this. I want to keep this for myself.
Right.
That would be a good reason to go with them. Yes or no?
Correct. Correct. You can set up private money any way you want to. You might set up private money to fund a fix and flip. You might set up private money to fund a lease option property. Or even a seller finance property and do a wrap or sell it on land contract or a rental property. So private money could be anywhere from short term, you know, you could use it for transaction or you could use it for, a fix and flip, or you could use it for a long-term rental if you wanted.
Okay. I like that idea, you know, because you get a little bit more time.
Right. Exactly. So if you can find private money, you go out and look, and you got to work it. You got to go out and look for it. You got to talk to people. You got to do, you know, go to your REIT group, find out who's using private money. Then go down to the courthouse and look them up. Look up their property deals. You know, who funded their deal? There's your private money lender right there. That's the easiest way. Good. Does that help?
Yes.
Excellent. Excellent. So who's next?
Yeah, I've got a question.
Sure.
It's Claire. When you're selling a note, what does a note buyer want to see? What docs should you have to be able to give them?
Everything. They want to know. You want to get them to sign an NDA, a non-disclosure agreement, and then you can give them the whole borrower application package.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, like the credit app. You know, the credit report, the application. You know, everything.
Right.
Yeah. And then once they look at it or whatever and determine, you know, if they're interested or they might want other stuff, you also send them the pay history, like if you use a third-party servicer.
Right.
Like FCI or AFTS or somebody like that, then you want to send them the the pay history. And you could just take a screenshot of it and send it to them. And then you want to get them to sign your note seller's disclosure and agreements. So that way, if everything is spelled out and they know that, you know, it's like they're buying a note as is, where it is, there's risk, the person could stop paying, it says non-recourse on it and all that good stuff. And that's,
okay.
That's in your Filthy Riches training.
Right.
Yeah, all that's it.
And anyway, the first house I sold, my paperwork I got from the buyer was not as thorough as it should have been. I mean, I suppose I could go back to the buyer and said, you know, can you give me a little more information? I just need it, you know, legally or whatever.
Well, So what kind of paperwork did you not get that you would like?
Well, in his application, there wasn't much about, and we talked a long time, so I kind of knew his situation and you know, that he was solid and all that. But, you know, he's got really, he didn't put down, he put down a reference that had no phone number. I ended up letting it go and, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, do you have a credit app on him?
I do. I got a copy of his credit report.
No, a credit application. Like this says
a credit
where, where he works, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, all that stuff, listing all the different bills and banks that he uses and the emergency contact information and all that good stuff.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't have, it's a little sketchy. It didn't all get filled in.
But you said you know this person, right?
Well, I talk to him a lot. I mean, verbally, I got a lot of the stuff. And
well, it sounds like you know them, so why don't you just go back and say, hey, you know, one of the things, I know you already live here, but one of the things I failed to do was get everything on you know, on a regular standard credit application. So do me a favor and just fill this out and send it back to me.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Just go back to him, and he's pretty happy, so that should be good.
Well, good.
So, okay. All right. All right, I just was thinking, you know, I really didn't pull my paperwork together properly for the next note buyer. So.
Yeah, next time get an RMLO to do it for you.
Okay, yep.
Good.
And are they, if Dodd-Frank goes away, are they, like, going to go away too?
If Dodd-Frank goes away, an RMLO won't go away. It's just because you still have to have them to get a regular mortgage loan. However, you won't have to use one to do seller financing if Dodd-Frank goes away.
Okay, as
what state are you in?
As a private, huh?
What state are you in?
I'm in California. My
That's right.
Houses are in Illinois and Ohio.
Okay. Well, in Texas, there's some legislation that they're trying to put together and to get passed where anybody that does seller financing is going to have to be an RMLO, not use one, but be one. I don't think it's going to pass. I mean, it's kind of preliminary, but, you know, they're still trying to do it. But so anybody here on Texas, contact your senators and talk to them about that. So did that help, Claire? Did that help?
Oh, yeah, thanks.
Good. You're very welcome. Who else has a question?
Larry, I got a question. Dave from Arlington. Hey, I got a friend, family friend, that's looking to move and sell their mobile home. It's kind of older ones, like late 60s.
Uh-huh.
But she only wants like $2,000 to $3,000 out of it. It's in an area that I think we could probably, you know, get somebody to buy it under seller financing pretty quickly. So I know you like to stay away from the older ones, but is there like exceptions to the rule, or
is this a double or a single wide?
But it's a single wide in a park.
Okay, that was my next question. Is it in a park?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay,
it's in a park.
So what is it, is the house livable now?
Yes. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, it's been kept pretty decently.
Okay.
I mean,
it's
old
now, and you're thinking about seller financing it, right?
Yeah.
Okay. And you can pick it up for $2,000 or $3,000.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you familiar with this park? Are they okay with you owner financing or buying stuff to resell?
That I don't know. Is that something you need to check with the park?
Absolutely. That's the first thing you need to do. I wouldn't tell them about the home, but just say,
okay,
hey, I buy and sell mobile homes, and sometimes
yeah,
I buy and sell some in some parks, and I just wanted to reach out to you and see if you're okay with investors buying and fixing up and selling or buying and selling with owner financing mobile homes in your park.
Okay.
And here's the follow-up line to that is you could basically turn a property that you're not getting any lot rent into a paying lot rent customer, tenant. right?
Okay, this is you're saying to the park owner?
To the park owner or manager, yes. You know, in other words, if you have any tenants that aren't paying and they're vacant or they need to sell or whatever, you know, I could buy them for cash and fix them up and sell them or owner finance them, and then you would have a good tenant, a good paying tenant in place. Now, here's the other thing. When you're selling with owner financing in a park, you must make sure that your buyer gets approved from the park first. You don't want to sell them a home and then they start filling out a credit app for the lot rent and they get turned down. But you sold them a home, but they're turned down, and now you got to unwind that transaction or they're going to have to move that home out of the park.
Got it.
Yeah, good. Good. I hope that helped.
Of course. Yeah, definitely. I hadn't even thought about checking with the park, so that's really good to know.
Yeah, you got to check with the park first. That absolute first. Plus, if you build a good relationship with them, they're going to be a great source for more homes for you. Yeah, they'll even, you know, now some park owners like to buy the mobile homes and resell them themselves with owner financing or for cash. But some of them do not. So you just have to find out which ones do and which ones don't.
Okay. And if I got turned down by that park and they said, no, we don't allow any of that, is there anything else I can do, or am I kind of stuck there?
So I don't really know why they would say no, that you can't buy and resell.
Okay.
But you could say, well, you know, let's see. You don't really want to tell them which one it is right now. But I don't really see any reason they would say no. But what they don't allow you to do is to buy them and rent them out.
Oh, okay.
Because they're already going to charge lot rent. They don't want investors owning the properties in there.
And renting them, yeah. That makes sense, yeah.
Good.
Okay.
Well, good.
I don't want tenants anyway, so, yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Me either.
Okay.
I don't want any tenants or rehabs.
Yeah.
There you
go. Yeah, another question while I've got you there. Been working on HUD homes, got some that are looking kind of good. What kind of things do you look for as far as criteria to determine what's the best exit strategy? Is that kind of like too vague? Or?
Well, as you're analyzing a deal, just run the numbers on it both ways to determine what's the best. What is the highest and best use of this property? That's a good appraisal term. What is the highest and best use of this property? So, you know, if it's a nice home in a nice area and it's livable and you can sell it for 3 to 6 times with owner financing, that might be its highest and best use.
Okay.
But if it's a fix and flip property and you can get it at a deep enough discount, but maybe it needs $10,000 to $15,000 in work, then that's a wholesale deal right there.
Okay. All right, that helps.
Good. I'm glad I could help.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody else have a question?
Question about virtual assistants. I was just wondering, are you still going through Relenta for those, or have you gotten away from Relenta?
Well, most of mine come from Upwork.com.
Okay.
Yeah, I've used multiple sources in the past. But most of mine, in fact, the ones I use right now are all through Upwork. Yeah, it used to be Odesk, but now it's Upwork. and I'm usually paying about $3.50 to $4 an hour, something like that. My guys are up to.
Okay.
Yeah. Just go in and do a
search. And they're pretty experienced then, or you have to go in and train them?
Well, here's the thing. That's what I was just getting ready to say is you want to go in and post a job. Like say you want them to build your buyer's list. You want to post a job that says, you know, I'm looking for somebody who has experience building an active buyer, cash buyer's list for real estate wholesalers. You know, don't respond or reply to the ad if you don't know how to do this. I'm not looking for somebody I need to train. I want somebody that already knows what they're doing and can build my buyer's list for me. And then you're going to get people that already know what they're doing. Pretty good idea.
Okay.
Huh?
Yes.
Good.
So it's no more than any other service. Because they post themselves on different services, right? So it just would depend, pretty much.
Upwork is probably the biggest one out there. Now, there are other.
Oh, okay.
There's Real Estate Virtual Assistants. There's Reva, R-E-V-A, Real Estate Virtual Assistants. There's a lot of them out there, and there's some that are real estate specific. They're typically a little more expensive, but they are real estate specific. So you can just Google that. Google Reva. Reva Virtual Assistants. I can't remember the exact domain, but Google Reva, and they do that as well. But I like Upwork. You could find your own.
Well, if they're real estate specific, that, you know, that kind of cuts to the chase. You know what I mean?
It does. You're going to pay a little bit more for that niche, but they do know what they're doing. That's for sure.
Cool.
Good stuff, huh?
Mm-hmm.
That's good. Well, good. Anybody else have a question? You guys know you can always email me, too, in between these calls. If you happen to think of something, shoot me an email. I get emails every day from students, and I usually answer them pretty quick, as most of you know. Anybody else have a question?
Oh, this is kind of a basic question, and that is buying multiple properties at once. Would it, and this is like seller financing, would it be better to just put, put more money down on those three? Say you're buying three, and it's $120,000 for the three. You know, put more money down on them. That way you get your payment lower, and then your cash flow would be more, perhaps?
Well, so you're buying with seller financing, correct?
Right.
And you're buying three of them, and you're wanting to put more money down so your cash flow is higher.
Tell the motherfuckers on the phone how you used to say.
Is that what you're saying? Hello? Is that what you're saying?
I'm sorry. That's correct. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. That's okay. So, okay. Now, what are your plans? Are you keeping it long term? Are you going to turn around and sell it again? Or what are you doing?
Hello?
So you would end up, say, maybe buying, you know, living in one perhaps, and then renting the other two out. It's would be like a cash flow type thing.
Okay, so you're going to keep your money invested long term.
Right.
Okay, well then what you need to do is just run the numbers and see how the different scenarios would play out based on how much cash you put down and, you know, what your ultimate goal is. You know, is your ultimate goal to put as least amount of money down as you can and have the other two pay for where you live? Or is your goal to, you know, put as much down as you can and collect a monthly cash flow as long as your yield is okay based on the amount of cash you put in it? You just have to run the numbers to see what your yield is.
I see different scenarios, right? You know, 10,000, 20,000, and then what would the yield be and what would the cash flow be?
Right, right.
Excellent.
In other words, if you put $10,000 down and you're getting $1,000 a year cash flow, well, you're still making 10%. But if you put $50,000 down and maybe you get, you know, maybe you get, you know, $5,000, you know, cash flow, well, that's still 10%. But would you be better off with the extra $40,000 in the bank for working capital to flip more houses? Or would you be better off putting it somewhere else? Or are you happy investing that whole 50 and getting a 10% return on it? Does that make
sense?
Well,
see what's nice? Yeah, absolutely. What I like about it would be the long-term tax advantage, you know, by keeping a couple of them.
Yeah, but you're going to have to keep more than a couple for it to really pay off. But what you can do is do a cost segregation study,
yes.
And then, you know, that way it's called componentizing, and then that way you can write off, depreciate at a faster rate, because different items in a house are depreciable at different number of years. But you got to collect quite a bit of real estate for it to make a big difference in a tax bill.
You'd need more doors than you're saying.
Yeah, well, you just need more asset. Yeah, now you have more dollars worth of property.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you could have 100 units and pay $1,000 a unit, you know, and that's still $100,000 worth of property. But, you know, you could buy one commercial building for $100,000 or one, you know, whatever, one house for $100,000, but it's still $100,000. And which you can only depreciate the improvements. You can't depreciate the land, which typically, now you'll get a cost seg study, but typically it's about an 80-20. 80% is going to be, you know, in our appraisers that are on here, you could probably speak up if you wanted to, but typically, as a general rule, it's going to be about 20% for the land and 80% for the improvements.
Okay, I understand totally. Look at the value and not the number of doors. Look
right.
at the total value.
The number
of
doors
asset.
Has nothing to do with the accelerated depreciation.
Okay, I understand now.
Good, good, good. That was a good question, though. Anybody else have a question?
They were saying that my tax preparer was saying that, you know, that they had changed it somewhat. And I don't know if it was based on the amount of units or value that there that you can really pay for repairs. I mean, you can depreciate repairs and not the improvements. So I've got to look into that more. There's a CPA.
Yeah, there's certain things depending on if you repair a roof or replace a roof. It's either going to be a capital improvement or it's going to be a repair. And that is going to determine whether you can expense it or whether you have to depreciate it. For example, you know, if you make a repair on the roof, you know, you're going to be, you should be able to, and I'm no CPA, but you should be able to expense that. In other words, that's an expense in that year. But if you put in a new roof altogether, then you have to depreciate that over the lifespan of the roof.
Okay, so say a layer of shingles over the top would be considered a repair, right? Because it's not a tear off, that type of thing.
I'd have to look that up. I'd have to look that up. It's not a new roof; it's a nail over. So I don't know specifically just offhand about that. But here's a better example.
Okay.
If you have an HVAC unit and they have to put a new coil in, okay, and they charge you $500, well, that's an expense. It's a repair. But if they put in a new unit, that is an improvement, and you're going to have to depreciate that over the next probably 5 to 7 years, 5 to 10 years maybe, for the HVAC.
Okay, so then definitely, because I just put a furnace in, and I know that would have to be depreciated.
Right, right. You're exactly right. Good. But always see your CPA. They know what to do. For a good tax attorney, John Heyer's probably the best one. I use him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's not cheap, but he's good. He's probably like $350 an hour.
You don't want cheap, you know, because you need the expertise there. I mean, as far as how I look at it, you know.
That's exactly right. That's like going to the heart doctor. You're not looking for the best price. That's good. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, Larry, I have a question.
Hey.
This is Adam.
What's up, buddy?
I'm doing good, man. I hope you are.
Doing great.
Good. Talk a little bit more about the virtual assistants and how you you pitch to them, you know, to ask, for example, asking someone to help. Sorry, there's a lot of noise there. How you pitch to them where you're trying to find someone to build your cash buyers list.
Yeah, you don't have to pitch anything to them.
I didn't mean pitch so much, but how would you phrase that request for that experienced person you talked about a little while ago?
Oh, okay. Let's see. You came to my office. Have you been to my office?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't sure which Adam this was. I got several Adams I work with. Okay. You know that flash drive you have?
Yes.
Look on that flash drive, and there's some sample ads on there.
Okay.
But here's the thing, you just run you an ad that says I'm looking for somebody to build my buyers list, and you must have experience in working with real estate investor wholesalers building a buyers list. And in fact, if you look on that flash drive, one of those ads will say, because some of them in there are mine, but I also just research other ads as well. So you could even go to Upwork and look for projects and type in the words real estate, wholesaler, buyer's list, that sort of thing, and see what other ads people are saying. And that's what I do about once a year is look for other ads and see what other people are hiring people to do. And I get good ideas from it as well. But even in one of my ads, what I was getting at, in one of my ads I say, you know, don't respond to this ad without telling me everything you would do to build my buyer's list. And I've learned stuff from them by saying that. You like that idea?
Okay. I do. I think you even mentioned it one time that either someone did or may actually respond and say, hey, I've already done this. I've got one already.
Yeah, somebody did. I hired a guy temporarily because he gave me his buyer's list.
Yeah, okay. And that kind of is a great segue to the next point, and maybe I need to dig a little deeper into the flash drive. Life happened, by the way. You said it would, Larry.
It does, doesn't
you said,
it?
You're going to leave here, guys, and life's going to happen. And, man, did it happen. But the dust is settling, so I'm gaining some momentum now to get
things
going.
That's good. Well, get back on track.
Yeah. Well, my personal business, it was a seasonal thing, and that just ended, so I've got some time now.
Oh, good.
Anyway,
I
all good
stuff.
Of
this is now.
Yeah. And anyway, and then the virtual assistant to place those HUD bids.
Right.
And I know there's some information there that I can dig into on the flash drive, but I guess one question would be, in finding a broker, you know, to use their ID number, their NAID, what could I say, what would be sort of a to-the-point comment or phrase to get them on board, for them to give me that their NAID number that I can share with the virtual assistant?
Well, you're not going to do that on the first call. Have them put in a couple offers and then say, you know, look, I know this takes up a lot of your time. You know, I'm really looking for somebody I can work with on a regular, consistent basis, and we can put in a lot of offers. You know, do you have an assistant that might be able to do this for you? You know, when they say no, well, you know, I wouldn't be opposed to paying an assistant to do this for you, and that way you don't have to do any of the work, but you get paid when the deal closes. Would that be something you would be open to if I hired you an assistant? You're not going to tell them right off the bat. You're going to hire them somebody in the Philippines, give me your NAID number.
Right.
You're going to say that right off the bat. Right?
Right. And for the sake of the conversation, could I not even say, hey, I have the time to put in several offers. Can I have your number, in essence?
Right. Yep.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Good. Excellent. I hope that helped.
Larry, on your virtual assistants, is there a top wage that you would go, you know, that you'd be willing to go and then no higher than that?
Well, I usually search for them in the $5 or less range. And I usually end up hiring somebody around $3 and then, you know, $2 or $3, and then work them up to $3 or $4.
Okay.
And then we always give them a bonus at, like, Christmas and stuff.
Okay.
Like my girl,
and that,
like one of my girls, Mercy, she just had a baby a couple months ago, and I think I gave her $200 bonus. That was like a month's pay for her. She was thrilled. Because she only works a few hours a day, so that was like a month's worth of pay for her. She was thrilled.
Okay, yeah, so she's not, you know, having to go out here and maybe work 60, 70 hours. She just wants like maybe 20 or 10 or something like that, right?
Yeah. I think she makes $375 an hour, and she works about 3 hours a day. Yeah, but she's been with me for about 3 or 4 years. Yeah. Good. Any more questions?
No. Oh,
Well, you guys ended up having some pretty good questions tonight. We got any more questions before we call it a night?
Yeah.
Well, guys, listen up. I really, really appreciate your business. I'm getting emails every day from people that are doing deals out there. So if you're not doing any deals yet, there's something you're not doing right, you let me know. If you run into a snag, if you run into problems, if you've been trying and working the business for a few weeks and it's not clicking, please reach out to me and let me know. And we'll figure out what's not working so we can help you make it start working, okay? So please reach out to me and let me know if things aren't clicking and I will help you, okay? So with that, thanks a lot for your business. I really appreciate it. And let me know if you guys need anything between now and the next 2 weeks. All right, guys?
All right.
Will do. Thank you, Larry.
All right. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
I called today.